Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on miracle foods, cures from the Bible, when we come back. You know, in Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question. The question is, by what way is it that the light is parted? An odd question. By what way is it that the light is parted? Or if we paraphrased it, it would say, by what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated? Now, can you imagine asking a question like that 4,000 years ago? Today, of course, it's a simple question to answer. The student instantly says, well, by passing it through the prism of the spectroscope. But who could have known 4,000 years ago in Job's day about spectroscopes? And since it is manifestly impossible for any human mind to frame a question like that, to frame a question that the mind knows nothing of, tells us then that a greater mind than Job is being the questioner here. But when we heat a metal until it's red hot, or we heat any substance until it's incandescent, it gives forth rays of light, and these rays, after passing through the prism of the spectroscope, divide themselves on the graph according to the content of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us from some far-flung star out in space, we need only to pass that light ray through the spectroscope to see the composition of the star and the proportions of each of its ingredients. This division of light rays is always constant. It doesn't vary. And we may always rely upon the results. And spectroscopic analysis is what we call an exact science. And this is the manner by which the light is apportioned or separated. And this places you and I in a quandary, because either Job knew this, or we're listening to a supernatural wisdom being revealed here. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. And this is one of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School that I conduct here twice a year at the law school in Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's a place to start. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing a book, about a 1 in 20 book, not the only one, of course, out there. This one's called Miracle Food Cures from the Bible by Reese Dubin, R-E-E-S-E-D-U-B-I-N. Last time, I was giving you some more information on the ESSIAC report. Now, last week, I gave you the complete ESSIAC report, and the ESSIAC report does not contain the formula for ESSIAC, nor does it contain the dosages that Renee Cassie had developed with President Kennedy's personal physician and other medical doctors over the years for the cure, not just the treatment, but the cure for cancer. Not every cancer, but most. Now, there are 10 cures to cancer. Remember that? We covered that last week, I think, in the ESSIAC report. I went over all 10 of them. 9 of them have been discovered by medical doctors, but they're not promoted, and they're buried, and they're ignored because they're cheap. And this ESSIAC, I mentioned last time, ESSIAC, the cure for cancer by using ESSIAC costs $40. I mean, it is so dirt cheap that everybody hates it, especially in the medical profession. See, lay people say, well, for $40 and I got cancer, it can't be any good. And the medical doctors say, for $40, we'd starve to death. And so, naturally, they don't want it. It's just a matter of economics and common sense. But if you want the formula and the dosages, it's contained in this book by Reese Dubin. Now, his name is R-E-E-S-E-D-U-B-I-N. The book is called Miracle Food Cures from the Bible, published by Prentice Hall. Now, there's a couple other neat foods in here. And remember, each one of these foods that Dubin goes through over here, he's showing you the chemical composition, the scientific chemical composition of those foods. And I've used an example. I said, you know, if you were tired and you were driving and you needed a quick pick-me-up, something to wake you up so that you wouldn't fall asleep at the wheel, you'd go get a cup of coffee. And that's because you know that their coffee contains caffeine, and you know that the caffeine keeps you from falling asleep. All right, so has it ever occurred to you that if coffee contains caffeine, that there might be other foods that contain caffeine? Could it be that other foods don't contain any caffeine at all, but they contain maybe boron or nitrogen or phosphorus or potash or iron or you know, something else? And the answer to that riddle is, yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. So when you eat bananas, you get heavy doses starts with a P now. Can't think of the name of it, but it's a trace mineral. Potassium, I believe it is. Potassium. And so I mentioned this the other day. I said, you know, the reason that you don't overdose on bananas is because you eat a banana, boy, it really tastes good, right? And you're eating this banana, and God, it's just really great. Now, try to eat a second one, or a third or a fourth banana. Then it shuts off. You know, your stomach just says, no, I don't want any more. Now, I mentioned obesity. And what's happening here with obesity is that the minerals that are in these various foods, when they get into your stomach, it sends a signal to your brain, and it says, shut that off, there's too much of it. You eat a banana, it sends a signal to your brain. It says, shut off those bananas. I can't stand anymore. Now, sometimes you're really hungry for a particular food, and I mentioned this the other day. I said, you know, I got a pregnant woman, and she wants to eat a peanut butter sandwich with dill pickles and onion. Now, if that wouldn't gag a maggot, I don't know what would, but it's very simple scientific observation here. This woman has this parasite growing in her inner womb. This baby is a parasite, just like a tick sucking blood out of your body. And this parasite is sucking in all of your vital minerals, your vitamins and minerals and so on. And so what's happening, ladies, is that your body says, oh my God, I need potassium, or I need copper, or I need this or that or something else. And so you get hungry for these kind of odd things, you know, like onions or pickles or vinegar or strawberries, or whatever it might be. And so you eat those foods that you need in order to feed that fetus, which is the parasite growing in your body. That's the answer to that, the scientific answer. Just a common sense observation also. All right, well now, various foods have various concentrations. Here's another good one over here. You eat spinach, you know, and it's got calcium in it. Spinach has calcium. But there's another herb, which is called lamb's quarter. It's just a crummy weed. They call it pigweed out here. It's just a weed. It grows everywhere. And you can eat it raw, right? You can just go out and pick the leaves off and eat them standing out in the field. Or you can go pick them and you can put them in a salad. Or you can cook them up like spinach. It looks just like spinach. It's just a green, like poke, spinach, pigweed. But it contains 325% more calcium than does spinach. All right, let's think about this. Let's suppose you had a calcium shortage. Would you want to eat spinach or lamb's quarter? Because the same volume of lamb's quarter will give you three times as much calcium as will the spinach. Now, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that you were really short of calcium. You could take that same lamb's quarter and juice it. And while you might not be able to eat a pound of lamb's quarter, you could certainly drink 3 ounces of lamb's quarter juice, which would come out of that pound of lamb's quarter. And the majority or most of that calcium is going to be in that juice. And this is where juicers come in. So when people have cancer, particularly cancer, Or they could have some other degenerative disease. But when, once we figure out what vitamin, mineral, amino acid, or enzyme you're missing, we can go to the specific food that you need. If you needed potassium, well, then we'd go over here and start feeding you bananas. If you had scurvy, we'd start feeding you vitamin C. And if you've got a calcium deficiency, we'd start loading you up on pigweed, etc. And we can juice that. And this is why juicers are so good for therapies, for natural alternative therapies for major diseases. All right, now just carry this one step further. All disease is caused by nutritional deficiencies and or a toxic condition, or the two in combination. You get disease, and the word disease simply means ill at ease. I don't feel good. I'm diseased. I'm ill at ease. My stomach hurts. My kidneys hurt. My head, I've got this terrible headache. Okay, you're ill at ease. You've got a headache. It's something wrong with you. And that pain sends you a signal, says something's wrong. So you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, well, let me give you a painkiller. Let me give you some morphine here. And the pain goes away. You say, my God, this guy is a miracle worker. I came in here, I had this terrible splitting headache. He gives me this pill over here, and God, now I feel real good. Now, he's got you hooked, because now you have to constantly come back to get this chemical concoction that the druggist is made up for you. So it makes money for the pharmaceutical company, it makes money for the doctor, it makes money for the druggist. And it makes you happy because it takes the pain away, but it never addresses the cause of the pain. And sometimes the cause of the pain, that is your headache, is simply you don't have enough water. You're dehydrated. Does the doctor say, oh, you've got a headache, drink more water? No. My God, that's cheap. That doesn't cost anything. There's no money in a cure like that. So then what we do is we tell you, well, what you need here is this Anacin or ibuprofen, or you need this drug, or you need something more powerful. You need some prescription pain reliever. And it relieves the pain. You get a headache, you take this aspirin. You get a headache, you take this aspirin. And, Dr. Batra, I think I mentioned this to you, this Iranian guy, he did a little research along this line. He says, you know, most headaches are caused by dehydration. That's simple enough. You're not getting enough water. And people, oh, no, I get plenty of liquids every day. And that's true. You get plenty of liquids every day. You drink coffee. You know, you get up in the morning, you drink 3 or 4 cups of coffee. And then maybe on your way down to a job or something like that, maybe you open up a can of Pepsi-Cola and you're sucking on this Coke thing. And then maybe while you're here on the job, maybe you've got a thermos bottle and you're pouring coffee or you're pouring tea or something like that. And so you're drinking coffee, you're drinking tea, you're drinking Coke, you get plenty of liquid. You say to yourself, I'm not dehydrated. I got plenty of liquid. And that's true. You're not dehydrated from a lack of liquid. You're dehydrated from a lack of water. And what happens here, and this Dr. Batra, you know, the Iranian, he figured this out. He said, well, you drink this coffee, it goes down in your stomach, and your stomach sends you a signal, and it says, food, digest it. And so it digests it, and it separates out the coffee from the water. Sends the water over to your kidneys. Kidney sends it to the bladder, and you urinate, and there goes the water. Never does get out to the cells in your brain. Never does get out to the cells at the ends of your fingers. And so the cells out here in your brain are screaming for water. And it sets off a chain reaction in your body. And so you get headaches, or you get various diseases, you get various symptoms for which you cannot get relief. Well, of course you can't get relief, because you never go to the cause, which is I need clean, pure water. That's all. Just clean, pure water. Now, I don't know if the chlorine and fluoride in the water sends a signal to your body to digest the water and sends it out through your kidneys. Or not. Now, many people in America today no longer drink tap water. They drink bottled water. I do. I wouldn't drink tap water. I was in a restaurant yesterday, went to town, and I ordered water. My God, it tasted like medicine. I mean, it was terrible. My God, it was terrible. I couldn't drink it. So then what you have to do is order coffee. Well, the coffee is made out of the same chemical soup. They just take water out of the tap, pour a little coffee in it to kill the taste of the chlorine. And so you're drinking the same chlorine and the same fluoride, whether or not you're drinking water or coffee or tea or whatever it is you're drinking here in the restaurant. So it sends you a signal. It says, well, I guess I got to bring my own water into the restaurant to drink, or I got to bring my own drink, or you can order a beer maybe. You know, and that's why I like to order foreign beers, because I suspect that they probably use the same water, except maybe for Coors. I don't know. They say they get their water out of the ground, but if you buy Mexican beer, or you buy Heineken beer, maybe the water that's coming over here from Holland, you know, hasn't been fluoridated. Maybe it's clean water. I don't know. But there's a couple of more little cues here in this book by Reese Dubin about a couple of real neat herbs. One of them is actually a vegetable, celery and parsley. Celery and parsley. They contain large amounts of certain biochemicals. Biochemicals that your body needs. And so as you go through this health food literature over here, you find out that, you know, whatever the ailment is, and I think there's 450 of them now. They have 450 symptoms that they've cataloged. And then they hang a label on it. And I mentioned this to you last time, it's Taiwan that we're here. They got an old biblical disease called leprosy. It's a nasty disease. It causes lesions in your flesh, and your flesh rots away. And it's just a nasty disease called leprosy. Now, modern medical science took a look at leprosy, and they said, well, listen, we think we can treat that. And so they came up with some chemical concoctions, and by golly, it works pretty well. It actually works pretty well. And so the old leper colonies that we used to have, and, you know, the quarantine that we used to use, you know, they got rid of those. And they changed the name of this leprosy to Hansen's disease, then they copyrighted and patented it. Copyrighted and patented. The medical profession is staffed by businessmen. And they're not dumb businessmen either. They're good businessmen. And they took a look at this and they said, look, medicine has the potential. John D. Rockefeller recognized this early on, back in the early 1880s and 90s. He said, you know, pharmaceuticals have all the potential for blockbuster business deals and blockbuster business profits. And he was right. He's exactly right. And that's because when you eat pig and plug up your arteries and you have a heart attack, it causes great pain and you need relief. So the medical profession teams up with the pharmaceutical industry, which in turn teams up with the legislatures of your state to create a monopoly. And they have a monopoly on heroin. They got a monopoly on these pain-killing drugs. And so when you've got this pain, the only solution that you have, well, you got two. You got the underground drug market, you know, Joe down on the corner. But, you know, the only real viable option most of us have is to go to the doctor, who in turn writes you a prescription that you take down to the drugstore, which in turn then makes up this concoction to alleviate this pain, which is what you want to buy, pain relief. So they don't sell you a cure for the cause of this malady. What they do is they sell you something to cover it up. And that's where the money's at. And that's why they keep you coming back. So instead of curing diabetes, they treat it with insulin. So that way they have a cash cow. They have an insulin cash cow forever. And then once they get you on this insulin, your pancreas shuts down and it never makes insulin again, so therefore they got you. They got you hooked. So if you've got diabetes, you can cure the diabetes by going back to the cause and then eliminating the cause. Well, getting back here to leprosy. See, this leprosy has a cause. And if you could get back to the cause, the bacteria. Okay, but what caused that bacteria to proliferate in your body? Where did that come from? And it's your immune system that is weakened, and your immune system, which cannot keep up with these leprosy bacterias or viruses, whatever it is. And so then it overwhelms your immune system, and these symptoms come out. The pharmaceutical company comes along and says, well, listen, we don't want to eliminate it either. We just want to treat it. So most all of these diseases, not everyone, but most all of these diseases, have treatments. that cost a lot of money, and it keeps you on the hook for as long as possible. I'll tell you a little story here. I was a young kid, you know, and I used to smoke cigarettes. And I developed pneumonia and went over to Dr. Nielsen over in Fortuna. And Nielsen, a nice guy, and took me and gave me a shot of penicillin, and it alleviated the symptoms right away. And I went back home, and I continued to smoke, and the pneumonia continued to persist. And so two or three times a week, I think it was about Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, old May would drive me over to the doctor's office. He used to be open until 8 o'clock. And so she'd take me over there in the evening, you know, after milking, and go over to the doc, and he'd give me a shot of penicillin. And this went on for about 6 weeks. Now, it cost $5 for a shot of penicillin. Three times a week, that's $15 a week. This is back in 1955, you know, when $5 was worth something. So, you know, in today's dollars, it'd probably be $25 to $50 a shot, I would guess, something like that. I haven't been a doctor, so I don't know what they're charging for penicillin. But in those days, it was $5 a shot. I'm getting three a week. And I continue to smoke. Now, the doctor knows I smoke. He never once did he say to me, hey, Gordon, you got to quit smoking for a week or 10 days until this pneumonia clears up. So here I am. I'm a hacking and a whacking and coughing and sneezing, and I've got the, and I feel bad. But I go over and I get this shot of penicillin. God, it makes me feel good. That penicillin, it really works. Penicillin's great stuff. Invented by the medical community, and it's just great. And so this goes on for, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, something like that. One day, a neighbor comes by. See, his name is Joe Toasty. Old Joe comes by, and I'm hacking and whacking. And you know, he sees me about twice a week, and this has been going on for a long time. And he looked at me, you know, and he says, you know, God, you are dumb. You know that? He said, here you are, you've got a lung disease, and you're smoking. You know, if you'd quit smoking for a week, the damn disease would go away and you wouldn't need the penicillin. Dummy! I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Why didn't the doctor tell me? Well, excuse me. If the doctor told me to quit smoking, and assuming that I could and I did, and the pneumonia went away, how many shots of penicillin would he be selling? The doctor's business is not to cure pneumonia. The doctor's business is to sell penicillin. Let's grow up and get real, kids. The doctor's business is to sell penicillin. That's where he makes his money. He buys the penicillin for $2 a shot, and he sells it to me for $5 a shot. If he were to tell me, stop smoking for a week, let me give you 3 shots of penicillin, it would cost him $6, he would sell it for $15, the pneumonia would go away with 3 shots of penicillin, and that would be the end of it. And he would make a profit of about $9. But if he keeps his mouth shut, and he doesn't tell me to stop smoking, and now he didn't tell me to smoke. He didn't tell me to continue smoking. He didn't tell me the smoking is helpful and it's going to make you feel real good. He just shuts up. Now, I'm going to guess 4 to 6 weeks. Let's just take 4 weeks times 3 shots a week. That's 12 shots. 12 shots at $5 each is $60. For which he spent $2 a shot, $24, and he sold it to me for $60. So he made $31, didn't he? So he made 3 or 4 times as much money off of me as he would have made had he told me to stop smoking. Now, Joe Toasty, see, he doesn't have anything invested. He's not selling penicillin. He's just an observer watching a dumb kid, you know, smoking cigarettes and gets pneumonia and he's feeling real bad and the dummy doesn't have sense enough to quit smoking long enough until his body can get on top of the pneumonia. And so he tells me, you dummy, quit smoking. So I did. I quit smoking for about, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 days, something like that. Kept getting the shots. Now the penicillin really went to work, knocked out the infection and then the pneumonia went away, and I quit going back to the doctor. And you know what the doctor said? well, you better keep coming back so that I can keep monitoring you. What's that all about? You know, I've got pneumonia. He cures the pneumonia with the penicillin. Well, the immune system accompanied with the penicillin and stopped smoking. That made the symptoms go away. Now the doctor says, well, keep coming back. Because that costs you another $5 per visit, doesn't it? So if he can get me to keep coming back so that he can put his stethoscope on my chest and listen to me breathe and say, well, you're getting better, come back next week. Hey, you're getting better, keep coming back next week. Every customer that comes back pays $5. He pays for this office call, doesn't he? In order to break myself from Dr. Nielsen, I had to just quit going back. I had an appointment for next week, and I never kept it. I just quit going back. I felt good, and I didn't need it anymore. You ever notice that? The doc keeps having you come back and come back and come back. Young mothers do this with their babies, and they just keep bringing the baby back every, you know, twice a month, just for a regular checkup, just a regular checkup. Nothing wrong with the kid. No symptoms. He's not sick. There's nothing wrong with him. But they've got these young mothers trained to come back for a regular checkup every month. Well, that's 12 sales a year. You know, you get 100 mothers to come in. And then let's say that the office call is $25 just for funsies. And you come in times 12 times a year. That's $300. And then he's got times 100 customers that do that. That's $30,000 a year. Just looking at babies that have nothing wrong with them. There's no disease, no symptoms, no nothing. He's making $30,000 a year off of 100 young mothers who are dumb enough to come in here every month, pay their $25, and have their kid looked at. It's kind of like a placebo. It makes people feel good. But it's more sinister than that. It makes people dependent upon doctors. It makes people incompetent in handling their diseases, unable to manage their own bodies. So when something comes up, the only solution that they know of, go to the doctor, go to the doctor, go to the doctor. And so they go to the doctor. Here in America, it's an epidemic, or it's a pandemic in America. Well, epidemic, I guess, is the right word to use, of medical non-need or medical superfluous nonsense. I told you the other day about this guy. He called here. His son is a druggist, and this guy had he's coughing up blood, and so. He went to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, you got lung cancer. And so he called my wife, and she says, no, you don't sound like you got lung cancer. See, my wife's had cancer for 28 years. She's actually a cancer sufferer, and so she knows what the symptoms are. And she said, well, you don't sound like you got cancer. You sound like you got a prolapsed lung. And I went back to the doctor and said, check me out again. And they did some more tests, and they figured, well, it's right, you don't have lung cancer. Which fits in with the medical practice. 50% of the diagnoses. Anytime you go to a doctor and the doctor says you've got diabetes, half the time that'll be wrong. You go to the doctor and says you've got cancer, half the time that'll be wrong. 50% of the diagnoses in America are incorrect. That's number one. That's why you should always get a second or third opinion. If I went to a doctor and he said you got cancer, I'd want to go to 5, 6, 7 doctors, have them look at me. Have them diagnose it. And if you could get 3 out of 6 to say, yeah, you got cancer, you probably got cancer. You know, if you can get 3 out of 6. And then 3 out of 6 are going to say you got something else. There's something else wrong with it. Which is just about right. About half the time, your diagnosis will be incorrect. And so this is why they kill 130,000 people a year, by giving you the wrong stuff for the wrong disease, or giving you too much or not enough of the right stuff. They call that iatrogenic disease, doctor-induced disease. Well, there's a miracle herb here that comes from the Last Supper, which removes poisons from your body. Now, remember, you're either starving to death or you're being poisoned. So if you're being poisoned by something, you know, these 87,000 chemicals, you know, that we use in our everyday life, if you're being poisoned by some of these chemicals, it's going to produce symptoms. And so you need something that'll get these chemicals out of your body. Now, the doctors have something that'll do that. It's called chelation. They got it. They don't want to use it because, see, it's too cheap. Now, I said to you that the medical profession is business-oriented. So if they come up with something that's a real moneymaker, like bypass surgery is a big moneymaker. I mean, it makes tons of money. They got another cure for this thing called atherosclerosis. It's called chelation. So now let's think about this for a second. You got a chelation thing, and I went through this chelation therapy one time. There's a, you know, the actual medical profession here in Springfield, Missouri. And there's one doctor. There's only one doctor in Springfield that does chelation. If you don't get it from this guy, you got to go to KC or St. Louis. As far as I know, there's three doctors in the whole state of Missouri that do this chelation. And the American Medical Society or Association, they're just really down on this chelation. Works like a shot. I mean, this stuff really works. Discovered by bona fide medical doctors. And it's dirt cheap. I think I was paying for intravenous chelation. This is about 10 years ago. But the intravenous chelation, as I recall, was $50 a week. $50 a week. I think I went in for 6, maybe 8 of these treatments. I'm sure it wasn't 10 or 15, but, you know, let's say it was 10. At $50 each, $500. Do you know what they charge for bypass surgery? $100,000. Now think of this. You've got all these bypass surgeons out here. See? And here comes George Gordon in, and his arteries are plugged up. You know, he's been eating fat and all kinds of bad food over here and hydrogenated vegetable oil and, you know, just smoking and drinking and chasing wild women, doing everything that I can to kill myself. And I come into this chelation therapy scene, and the guy says, well, for $50 a week, you know, you come in once a week. We'll schedule you in, and it takes about, I don't know, an hour or something like that to run this bag of stuff into your veins. And they took a look at me after 6 or 8 or 10 weeks or whatever it was that I was going there, and they said, well, how do you feel? I said, I feel great. And they took a look, and they said, well, we've just about melted all the stuff off of your arteries. There's just nothing left in there for us to do. I mean, you can keep coming back if you want. We'll take your money, but you don't need to come back anymore. And so I quit, and I felt great, and I've felt great ever since, and I'm just living my life and doing my thing over here. But by doing that, you see, it cost the medical profession. I paid $500 for that treatment and solved my problem, cured the malady. But it cost the medical profession $100,000 because, you see, if I'd had to have bypass surgery, which is the only other solution to this that I know of, they would have made $99,500 more. Now, the medical profession is not staffed by a bunch of dummies. And that's why they are selling away from chelation and selling into bypass surgery. Nothing, you know, it's nothing personal. It's just money. So let's wake up and be intelligent people. And then if you want to go to the next step over here, you know, the next step is, well, why don't we prevent these diseases? Why don't we just eat in such a way, get the vitamins and minerals that we need so that we don't plug up our veins, don't give ourselves pneumonia, and we don't have toxic syndromes. Avoid drinking tap water and sucking in all the fluoride and chlorine. You know, you can stay out of more trouble than you can get out of. Hang on, I got to give you a reminder here, and we'll be back with more on parsley and celery when we come back right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information about that, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs, are an educational service that are brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications so endorsed are going to recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review or reciprocate in any way. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the program are political, or they're religious or economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. But they should. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing a book here that we believe is true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, called Miracle Food Cures from the Bible, written by a fellow named Reese, R-E-E-S-E, Reese Dubin, D-U-B-I-N. As I mentioned before, the Essiac formula and the dosage is in here. This book is just filled with dynamite information. And remember, when I review a book, that I can only cover, you know, the tip of the iceberg, At the Passover table, parsley symbolizes new beginnings because it's one of the first herbs to appear in spring. But parsley is much more than that. Parsley juice is valuable for removing poisons from your body. It's a detoxifying agent. Parsley has a marked action upon the tubules or tubules of the kidney, neutralizing and promoting excretion of waste products containing uric acid by virtue of a substance that it contains called apiol, A-P-I-O-L, which assists in the concentration of urea. Parsley is an excellent diuretic. It drains excess fluid from the body. It is used medicinally for a variety of illnesses, but more particularly for kidney inflammation, inability to urinate, painful urination, prostate pressure, gravel, kidney stones, and other urinary disorders. Culpepper wrote, "The seed is effectual to break the kidney stones and ease the pains and torments thereof." If you get kidney stones or gallstones, there are modalities, herbal modalities, for dissolving those and passing those without surgery. Most people don't want that. They want the surgery. They prefer surgery. They desire surgery. They want to go to the hospital and use their hospitalization plan. But you should be aware that every time you get an operation performed on, especially when you get to be old like I am, see, now I'm pushing 70, for me to go to the hospital and have an operation is almost like giving me a death sentence, because it is so stressful on your body that it drains the energy, it drains the immune system, and you may not recover. Now, young people, you know, you're 30, 40 years old, you know, you can go out and have an operation, your body's still young, vigorous, and strong, and you can probably recover from it. So the older you get, the less surgery that you can be exposed to, the better for you. That surgery is going to shorten your life. Furthermore, you're prohibited from using surgery, and the scripture tells you not to make these cuttings and markings on your body. I can't think of a better cutting or marking on your body than an appendectomy. So you might want to think about that. And furthermore, all of those organs in your body are necessary. Now, for people that evolved, well, then they're just not necessary at all. For those of us that were created, the guy that created us over there didn't put that appendix in there for no good purpose. He had a reason for putting it in there. And same thing with your tonsils and adenoids and your gallbladder and your appendix, you know, all these. It is true you can live without them for a while, but you won't live as well without them, and you won't live as long without them. So if you want to shorten your life and live poorer, well, then go ahead and have them cut out. But if you want to live longer and live better, then leave them in. Now, parsley is an excellent diuretic. And ever since I started to take parsley, I got relief from both the bladder irritation and prostate pressure. Now, after over a year, I feel so grateful. I want to pass the information on to others that suffer as I did. That's Mr. R.B. Mrs. M.D.R. reports, I was incapacitated by what was diagnosed as toxic poisoning accompanied by a tough case of phlebitis, inflammation of the kidneys. For 2 years, I helped support a general practitioner and a neurologist. I got to underline that. For 2 years, I helped support a general practitioner and a neurologist. Now, here's a lady, Mrs. M.D.R., who woke up at the end of 2 years and said, At the end of that time, I could not walk across the room without help. I lost 50 pounds, and my pocketbook was a mere shadow of its former self. Again, you know, these doctors, you know, they're businessmen. Now, some of them may be ignorant businessmen. I mean, medically, they may be ignorant, and they can't help you anyway. But even if they can help you, a lot of them are frauds and charlatans, and even though they know what the cure is, they won't give it to you, because if they cured you, you aren't going to come back anymore. Now, an acquaintance asked me if I had tried parsley tea. As I had never done this, he gave me these instructions. Take a fresh bunch of parsley, wash it in cold water, place it in a dish, and cover it with scalding hot water. Cover it to keep it warm. When cold, pour off the liquid and drink during a 24-hour period. Repeat until you're cured. Now, I've recommended this to so many people. They never fail to get a cure, regardless of whether it's a kidney or bladder complaint. I've never known it to require more than 3 weeks for a cure, and I've known several cases where only 3 days were necessary. My own case required between 2 to 3 weeks for a cure, and there has been a lapse of 35 years without a recurrence. 35 years, which is she got a bladder infection. And her immune system cannot get ahead of the proliferation of these bacteria. So she goes to the doctor, and the doctor's shooting her up with snake venom and monkey pus, and it doesn't do anything. It costs her a lot of money. She gets worse and worse and worse. Doesn't kill her, but she gets worse and worse. She gets weaker and weaker. She gets poorer and poorer. Then finally, she's talking to some guy, like I told you, I'm talking to this guy, his name is Joe Toasty. He says, you dummy, quit smoking for a week. Now, actually, Joe Toasty was practicing medicine without a license. He was diagnosing, and he was prescribing. And had the AMA had their head on straight, they would have prosecuted Joe Toasty and put him in prison for telling a 15-year-old kid to quit smoking for a week and get over his pneumonia. But that's the way the law works. I don't make these laws, now, by the way, so don't get mad at me. The legislature makes these laws, and you can't prescribe. You can't diagnose. And so the guy writing the book here, over and over again, he says, now make sure that you ask your doctor if this is okay. Go, make sure you go to your guardian now, boys and girls, because this might be too much for you, too big a decision for you to make. You want to make sure you ask your doctor about making this parsley tea. And he'll call it, well, it's some kind of a quack remedy. That's what he'll tell you. Now, the reason this remedy works is because this parsley has this chemical, this biochemical in it. It's got vitamins and minerals. It's got something that your body needs in massive doses. And that's why this tea is good thing. Ordinarily, when you put parsley on, you know, you put a little sprig of parsley, you know, on the plate. Now, you people, when you go into Denny's, you know, they always put a little sprig of parsley on your plate when you order steak and eggs. Do you ever eat that parsley? No, you don't eat that parsley. That's just decoration. See, you didn't know what that parsley had. And besides that, that parsley hasn't got enough of it in there to do you any good anyway. You're right. It's just a decoration. But when you need the particular biochemical that's in the parsley to cure the bladder infection, what you do is you take a bunch of this stuff and you make a tea out of it. You get all of it out of it and put it in this tea, this little drink. And then you drink 2 or 3 ounces of this. And you do this for about 3 weeks. You do it every day. You go to the store and you buy about a pound of parsley and you come back and you take, 2 or 3 ounces of it and you put it over here and you steep it in the tea and you take this tea and you do this for about 3 weeks and the thing goes away because you're taking massive quantities, massive doses of this biochemical. That's the objective. That's what you're doing here with herbology. You're giving your body the building blocks that it needs to fix itself. And it'll fix itself. Your immune system's, works pretty good. I've recommended this to many people, and it's never failed to get a cure. Bladder infections, parsley tea. Bladder infections, parsley tea. It's just that simple. No doctor ever recommends parsley tea. Why? There's no money in it. No money. Now, once in a while, you'll find a doctor, he gets tired of dinking around with you. He says, here, go down here and do this, this, and this. And he tells you what the cure is, what the secret is, and he cures you up. A few months ago, I heard that a friend was having kidney trouble. Without further investigation, I sent her the above instructions. So about a month later, I received a 2-page letter telling me that she had been under a doctor's care for 6 months with 2 hospital confinements. She received my letter on the day that she returned from the last hospital trip, and she was ready to try anything once. In 3 days, her urine was perfectly clear. She was ready to resume her household duties in her mobile home. In a week's time, she was covering the park to catch up to her social obligations and to tell the world about her wonderful cure. All right. So there's... And they go through a bunch of these testimonials in here. It's kind of like a religious operation. You want to tell you about Jesus, and so they want to get real, real religious. Now, the answer to the riddle over here was very simple. This parsley contains the nutrients that her body needed to jack up her immune system to cure the problem. Now, there's 450 of these problems. They're all called diseases. They all have treatments and they all have cures. If you want to cure the disease and get rid of it, then you go to the herbs. If you want to treat the disease so that you have something to talk about at the dinner table and that you've got conversation with your friends about all of your maladies because you're a hypochondriac, well, then you want to go to the medical doctor. An Aunt Floy like that. See, the only thing that she had to talk about was her incurable diseases and all of her maladies and her visits to the doctors and the hospitals. And when you went over to Aunt Floy, it was always, you knew what the conversation was going to be. It was Aunt Floy's diseases and all of her maladies. I mean, she never talked about the war in Korea or about World War II or George Patton slapping a soldier. None of that ever came out. My Aunt Floy, all she talked about was her latest operation or what the latest prognosis was for her recovery, which was dismal, and it's probably she only had months to live, and just on and on. It was a real downer. I used to go over and visit my Aunt Floy every once in a while, but we don't want to spoil people's fun and happiness in life, and that was her fun and happiness in life was her maladies, and many people are like that. Many people are like that. They don't want a cure. They want to be sick. They desire sickness and disease, for which the medical profession is deeply grateful, I'm sure. Now, here's a diabetic, a guy by the name of Ted V, a man with advanced diabetes, was told by his doctors that his condition was hopeless and was sent home to die at age 60. At age 90, he was still alive in excellent health. He started eating a combination of garlic, parsley, and watercress. His blood sugar dropped from over 200 to 110. He went on happily using his remedy for many, many years. Now, this garlic over here is a killer. I mean, this stuff really smells bad. And that's why people don't like it. You take a clove of garlic and you chew it up real good and you eat it. God, that stuff tastes bad. I mean, if there's something worse than garlic, God ain't invented that yet. But again, this garlic has, it's got some nutrients in there. It's, instead of penicillin, you take garlic. Garlic does what penicillin does. It's an antibiotic. It's a natural antibiotic. Now, if you don't like bad breath, you should go to the doctor and get penicillin. If you don't care about the bad breath, then you don't want to spend the money on the doc over here, well then, penicillin's the answer to your riddle. Mr. CD suffered from prostate enlargement with infection and pus, finally complete stoppage of urine. He was extremely frightened and had fever and chills. He was rushed to the hospital, where a doctor quickly inserted a tube to drain his bladder. He could not urinate without the tube. He was told that he needed surgery, but they could not operate since he had diabetes. He was advised to try parsley tea. After drinking this tea, he could urinate freely without a tube. His sugar dropped to normal, and surgery was happily avoided. Many others report similar relief. So if you're a person that wants to avoid surgery and the complications that go along with it, now, you know, you're told constantly diabetes is an incurable disease. Well, of course it is. All diseases are incurable as long as you keep feeding the disease. Now, if you'd stop feeding the disease, now I mentioned this at the beginning of today's program. You know, here I am smoking a pack of Camel Studs a day. I've got pneumonia. I'm taking penicillin. If at any time you would quit feeding the disease, it would go away. And mine did. When I quit smoking for a few days, wasn't even a week, but I quit smoking for a few days, the symptoms went away. And the doctor said, well, that's good. You know, my penicillin has worked. And no doubt that the penicillin worked. I could have done the same thing with garlic. And had I been in an earlier age, you know, if this would have been 1856 or 1865, some old grandmother or some old Aunt Bessie would have said, well, give that kid garlic, and that'll cure the pneumonia. Now, these cures, these old folk remedies, are poo-pooed and laughed at and ridiculed, mocked and made fun of by the medical practitioners. And with good cause. Good cause. What medical doctor with his head on straight would want to look you in the eyes and say, you can come to me, and I will give you penicillin. And the penicillin will cure your pneumonia. And it'll probably cost you $500 or $1,000 and maybe a couple of trips to the hospital. Or you can go down to the local Piggly Wiggly store and you can buy 3 or 4 cloves of garlic for about $3 or $4. And you can take those home and you can eat those 3 or 4 cloves of garlic over the next week. And it will also cure your pneumonia. Probably do it for about $1.98. And then avoid 1 or 2 trips to the hospital. Now, what doctor in his right mind is going to tell you that? He's going to laugh at you and say, well, that might have worked back in Grandma's day, and before we had modern medicine, and before we had real drugs, and we really knew how to treat penicillin, and they didn't have anything else, and they had to do something. Well, yeah, garlic was okay back in the Middle Ages, but not today, not in modern America. Well, okay. But boys and girls, if you could cure pneumonia in 1855 with garlic, is there something about garlic today that won't cure pneumonia? If garlic is a natural penicillin, a natural antibiotic, today, and it was used in times past, couldn't we use it today to get the same results as we did in times past? Now, you see, there's no money. I'm not getting paid. You know, a doctor, when you come into his office, you know, you've got pneumonia and you feel real bad. And he says, well, we've got an approved therapy over here called penicillin or Erythromycin or something like that. And then you search him out. He's listed in the Yellow Pages. But you see, George Gordon isn't in the Yellow Pages. And George Gordon doesn't make any money by telling you that garlic will do the same thing as the penicillin. And that we used to use garlic. And garlic is a folk remedy. And garlic's been around for thousands of years. And it was made by God for that express purpose. I don't get any money for that. I'm not getting paid for today's broadcast. You're not going to send me $25 and buy garlic from me. Hell, I'm not even in the garlic business. You're not even, I just told you the answer to the riddle, and I'm not even going to get to sell you the dollar's worth of garlic that it'll take to cure you. I'm not even going to sell you the parsley, for crying out loud. You're going to go buy that someplace else, aren't you? So can you see why it is that there's nobody out there that is promoting these types of remedies? Because there's no money in it. The money is in the big ads that you see on the 6 o'clock news every night with Bob Schieffer, you know. All right, this book, again, is called Miracle Food Cures. Miracle Food Cures from the Bible. Reese Dubin, D-U-B-I-N, Prentice Hall. And it goes on here and it tells you a whole bunch of stories in here about all these neat parsley cures in here. And here's another one. The ancients believed that parsley would fasten loose teeth and brighten dim eyes, which holds up scientifically. Let me underline that. It holds up scientifically. I mean, here we are in modern 21st century America. Since parsley contains 22,500 units of vitamin A per ounce, four times as much vitamin C as does an equal weight of oranges, and has an iron content far surpassing that of spinach, 5.73 milligrams per ounce versus 1.2 for spinach. I mean, this stuff, look, it's got more iron. This parsley has more iron. Six times as much iron as spinach. Now, you people, you know, you watch Popeye in the movies and you say, wow, that Popeye, he's really powerful. He's got all his iron in his spinach. And, you know, spinach is really a pretty poor vegetable. You know that? Now, Dorothy H. Anderson, M.D. of Columbia University, reported tests on animals in which vitamin A increased resistance to hernias, a frequent problem for older people. A deficiency of vitamin A, she found, increased susceptibility to this ailment. Now, look, some of you old folks out there, you've got hernias, don't you? Has anybody ever told you it's a vitamin A deficiency? And the person who did the work on this is Dorothy H. Anderson, M.D. of Columbia University. Now, nobody's going to come in here and tell you to drink parsley or to eat parsley over here to cure your hernia. They're going to send you over here to get a hernia belt. And they're going to send you into the hospital to get an operation on your hernia. That's surgery. A hernia is worth several thousand dollars to the medical profession. Parsley isn't worth anything to the medical profession. So when you've got hernia, nobody's going to recommend parsley. I just thought I'd throw that out there for you so that you can understand the economics of it. Medicine is an immensely profitable business. It's the biggest industry in America. It represents 16% of the gross domestic product, $1.6 trillion a year. And by God, nobody's going to dink around now with an industry like that by recommending parsley and garlic or celery. Not when we've got cut, burn, and poison. Well, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right there. We'll be back with more on this thing of miracle cures from the Bible next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.